Erica McIntyre, Jason's Connections Content Director. Today, our founder, Jason Harris, will be speaking with Melissa Milinovich, who was diagnosed with spinal muscular atrophy at the age of 2. She is a career woman and a mom. She also serves on the National Board of Directors for Cure SMA, speaks at many events to advocate for the rights of people with disabilities, and is the board chairman of the Accommodations Committee for the 2017 Real Abilities Film Festival.
Great. Thank you for joining us today. Can you tell us about yourself?
Sure. So I currently live in Amelia, Ohio. I have an almost 9-year-old daughter who is my real job, as she would say. but my career-wise, I work for Hewlett-Packard Enterprises in the United States Public Sector Division as an IT hardware asset manager.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what do you do with that? What, I mean, can you explain to people what that is?
I can try. A lot of people don't quite understand if they're not in the information technology field. But basically, I help some of our government agencies keep track of their IT assets, such as computers, printers, software, that type of thing.
Wow. And where'd you go to school for that?
So I graduated with my undergrad from Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio. And I actually just graduated with my master's degree this week from University of Phoenix.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks.
So can you explain to people what spinal muscular atrophy is?
Sure. It is a form of muscular dystrophy. And for those of you who are not familiar with muscular dystrophy, muscular dystrophy in itself is not a disease. It's actually an umbrella for 40 different neuromuscular conditions, and SMA is one of those neuromuscular conditions. We often say that it's ALS, except it's in kids, because a lot of people are familiar with ALS.
Mm-hmm. Is it fatal like ALS?
It can be. I am one of the very fortunate ones I was diagnosed as an infant, but I have successfully lived into adulthood. But unfortunately, that is not the case with a lot of people that are diagnosed with SMA.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Thank you. You're also an accessibility advocate. What's your experience with accessibility, especially around college and the working world?
So I think we have come a long way since the ADA was put into effect, but I think we still have a long way to go. You know, I was a young child when the ADA first came into existence, so I have definitely seen the improvements. But as an adult with a young child now, I see where there is definitely still room for improvement, especially in the newer buildings that are supposed to be ADA compliant, but I don't know that businesses actually understand what that means anymore. And because the ADA is a complaint-driven law, it takes people actually bringing it to their attention to get it fixed.
Mm. I mean, so like how many people would you say have to bring attention to it before it sort of becomes an issue where somebody notices it?
So I really think it depends on the establishment. I have found a mixture of both. I have found that some businesses just, you know, they didn't realize and they're quick to make an adjustment or help to rectify the situation. Other businesses, they don't want to be bothered with it. And so in those cases, typically, I have not done it, but I've had friends who have had to take a legal action to get them to be ADA compliant.
Mm-hmm. And like what type of things do you think has gotten better since the ADA, and what things do you think there's still sort of, you're seeing that still aren't being addressed?
So definitely, you know, curb cuts, you know, entrances without barriers such as stairs, having automatic doors, those types of things have definitely improved over the years. But I'm noticing a growing trend where an accessible door, you know, may break, or some of them have a sensor and those sensors may go out, and those are not often fixed as quickly as a regular door would be fixed. And so I think that's definitely an area that businesses could be improved, just to keep that in the back of their mind when they're, you know, thinking of things for able-bodied people. That small check could make a difference for me having to sit out in the rain until somebody can help me, or being able to go straight inside.
Mm-hmm. Do you think some of it is, we've talked to somebody who deals with handicapped parking spots, and I think sometimes people think, well, they're not going to be used anyways. Do you think that sometimes goes into the business's lack of willing to fix it promptly?
I think so. And, you know, accessible parking is one of my pet peeves, because I see a lot of people using accessible parking as just a, I'm just running in, I'm only going to be a minute. And, you know, it kind of drives me crazy, especially here in Ohio when it's raining or snowing, and I can't be out in the elements very long.
Mm-hmm.
So I think society in general, I think, needs a mindset shift. I think mm-hmm. that they need to understand that these types of things are not nice to have. It's a necessity for those of us who actually need to utilize the accessible parking or the automatic doors, elevators, those types of things.
Yeah, do you think in some ways people just in some ways put that on because they put a limit on you and they don't necessarily think that you're going to be out and about in society, or that you know, most people don't even consider? Most people are so sheltered from seeing somebody in a wheelchair or somebody with a disability that they just don't think it's as big as that many people can do it.
I definitely think that. It's funny that you mentioned that, because some friends of mine, we often joke how people we don't know, strangers, will often come up to us and, you know, tell us how great it is to see us out, or you know, when I'm out with my daughter and I'm assisting her with something, you know, they just think it's wonderful that I'm helping her. But it's because they make these comments because I have a disability. They wouldn't do it to someone who is able-bodied. And it seems like people just don't expect us to have a normal life.
Does that mean, how does that weigh on your self-perception of yourself and of other people with disabilities? I mean, does it hurt? Does it mean, I would think that would mean for when people do it to me, it kind of hurts.
So I think because I've grown up with it, I've just gotten used to it, which doesn't mean that it's right. It's just something I've mm-hmm. learned to tolerate. But yeah, you know, my disability is visible because I use a wheelchair, and I know there are some people who have invisible disabilities, and they have their own struggles, but because my disability is so visible, I really just want to be treated like anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I strive to live a very normal life with my career and my child and my relationships, and I really wish that society as a whole would view me no differently than my able-bodied friends.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good point. And what challenges do you face being a single mother because of your disability, or because of people's perceptions of your disability and being a single mom?
Well, a lot of people seem to be surprised when she calls me mommy, or mm-hmm. when I mention that she's my daughter. You know, I don't know if people just think she's my little sister or some other relation, but they seem very surprised when they find out that she's actually my biological child. And, you know, she's able-bodied. She does not have a disability. But to her, I've always just been mommy. She doesn't see my disability. And I've strived her whole life to make sure that my disability never impacted hers. You know, I still make sure she does all the physical activities like dance and karate. But when I'm attending those functions, I do get strange looks because they're trying to figure out why I am there if they don't know me.
Rita, we've talked to a couple of mothers. I don't think people realize that, and I don't know if this is your case, that it's not legally you don't have the same protections as other parents do. Being a parent with a disability, it's easier to have your children taken away. If people tried to do that or sort of looked at you as being less, we know we've talked to a couple other people, they've had that problem, whether it's a physical or it's a disability like autism.
No, I've never experienced that, but I have heard cases and I've seen cases in the news where that occurs, and it saddens me because I don't think a person with a disability should be judged on their ability to care for a child by that. You know, my child is almost 9 and she's very well taken care of. Granted, she's a very independent child, so I was blessed in that aspect, but I'm raising her the exact same way that I would be raising her if I was able-bodied. You know, I'm teaching her to not be a helpless child. She's expected to do things for herself. She's expected to clean up after herself, those types of things. And it's not because I have a disability, that's just my mindset. And I think that a lot of people are blinded by seeing a disability and just automatically think, oh, well, they can't, there's no way they can be a good parent. But I think that also flows over to really any aspect of life. You know, they can't be a good employee because they have a disability. They're going to be sick all the time. Or they can't be a good spouse. You know, I think that it's just that mentality.
And I mean, one of the things you're big at is Cure SMA. And what is that?
So Cure SMA is the leading organization searching for a cure and providing support for those affected by SMA.
And what is your role with them?
So I sit on their national board of directors. I represent the adult population and the adult voice. But I also mentor teenagers and young adults with SMA, and I attend our annual family conference where I facilitate group sessions for the adults with SMA, and then I also facilitate a transition session for people going into college to try to assist them with issues that or concerns they may be having about leaving the safety of their home and going to college.
And how many people would you, do you have an estimate of how many people have SMA?
I don't off the top of my head. I know that SMA is the number one genetic killer of children under the age of 2. Our SMA is considered to be an orphan disease. So it's not a well-known disease, even though there seems to be a greater population every year of babies diagnosed with it.
Thank you. You're also part of the accommodations. You're the chair of the accommodations committee for Real Abilities. What are you going to do through that?
So my job as the accommodations chair is to make sure that the entire event is accessible to all types of different disabilities. And by accessible, I don't just mean ADA compliant. I mean actually accessible for, you know, for example, for someone in a wheelchair. Are the table heights okay? Is there plasticware available for somebody who cannot lift silverware? Are there plastic drinking cups available? Those types of things that are not always looked at by a venue, just simply because they're not exposed to that type of need.
So, I mean, are the accommodations going to be mostly focused on physical, or are there going to be those for people with sensory issues or other things that aren't necessarily just physical?
So, we're going to be looking at everything. I know currently they are working on getting the luncheon film section, they're trying to get subtitles on those for people who may have hearing disabilities. And then I believe there was some talk about getting Braille incorporated on something, whether it be the programs or there is something. We're just now kind of getting together and getting everything planned out. We've got the venue secured, and now we're getting all the details together.
Yeah, I know, like, one of the things is with Cincinnati's, and I don't know if you guys have thought, is that it tended to be very over, like, sensory-wise, like, very loud. For me and a couple other people, I know, like, is that something that's being considered well, like, how sound works within the space to make sure it's not over-stimulating?
Right. So I know I was not involved in last year's film festival, but I know that they received a lot of feedback about those different issues, and the entire festival team took that feedback and is incorporating and making changes.
Cool. What do you wish more people understood about people with disabilities? I think you've done a lot to explain that already, but just to reiterate.
So, I mean, yeah, I'll say it again. I really just wish that people would just look at us no differently than anybody else. And that even goes in terms of just approaching us. I've grown up kind of getting used to people staring, and it's just something that doesn't really faze me anymore. But I prefer questions rather than somebody just staring or making assumptions, because those little questions can open the door to a conversation, and maybe the next time they encounter someone with a disability, it will be a different experience for them.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good point. Well, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Not that I can think of. You know, I want to thank you for this opportunity, and I think that you guys do a really good job of advocating and getting voices out there, and I'm happy to help.
Yeah, thank you so much. I think I learned a lot, and I think the listeners are going to learn a lot from what you said today. Thank you so much.
No problem. It was good talking with you.
Good talking to you. Have a good day.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks. Bye.